All right, so good evening, everyone. Calling the meeting to order. And our first order of business is two items in closed session. The first is an update on the 28 Mill Street lease agreement, and the second is appointments to advisory committees. So our reasonings for going into camera is due to a position, plan, procedure, criteria, or instruction to be applied to any negotiation carried on or to be carried on by or on behalf of the municipality. And the second is regarding personal matters about an identifiable individual. So I'm looking for a mover and seconder to move into camera, please. Councillor Ferguson and Councillor Maiden, all in favor? Thank you. We're in camera. All right, so I'm calling the meeting back to order. We started with a closed session. And we did have pecuniary interests declared by two members. So we'll do that before moving on. Do you want to declare your pecuniary interest?
I have a family member that works for MRPC, so I'll be declaring conflict of interest on the vote. Thank you.
Okay, so on item B1?
B1.
Okay. And Councillor Dalgety?
I have a conflict on B2, a business relationship with one of the applicants.
Okay. So from item B1, there is a recommendation that council will be passing in open session. And that motion is that council directs staff to write to the Mississippi River Power Corporation accepting the terms of lease termination as of November 30th, 2020, and that a payment of an additional amount of $27,000 be made to the municipality. Is there a mover and seconder for that recommendation? Councillor Maiden and Councillor Ferguson, any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Thank you, that carries. And then item B2 is appointment of advisory committee members. And this item as well has a motion that will come out of camera that we will pass now in open session. The motion is that council appoint Don McGeechee and Noreen Young to the Community and Economic Development Advisory Committee, and that Councillor Ferguson also sit on the Community and Economic Development Advisory Committee and on an interim basis until further representation from Pakenham has been identified. Is there a mover and seconder for this motion? Councillor Holmes? Councillor Maiden? Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion. Thank you, and that carries. And I'll invite you all to stand for O Canada, followed by a moment of silent meditation. Thank you. Attendance.
All members of council are present.
Just if you can use your microphone when we, yeah. So we have all members in attendance. I'm looking for approval of the agenda. Is there a mover and seconder to approve the agenda? Councillor Holmes? Councillor Maiden? Any discussion on the agenda? Seeing none, all in favor? Thank you. The agenda is printed, is approved. Disclosure of pecuniary interest. We've had two declarations for in-camera items. If there is any other declarations that need to be made at this time of pecuniary interest or general nature thereof, you can make that statement at this time or when the item arrives on the agenda. Approval of minutes. We have council minutes dated September 29th and October 6th to be approved. Mover and seconder for those sets of minutes. Councillor Ferguson, Deputy Mayor Minnelli. Anything arising from the minutes? Seeing not, all in favor? Thank you. The minutes are approved. And that brings us to the first of three presentations. The first is a deputation by Chris Loretto and Caitlin McClung from Strategy Corps. And this is the final report for the service delivery review that has been undergone. I think we have, oh, Chris, and it's Connor. Sorry, I thought we had Caitlin. It's Connor. So not quite unmuted yet.
Thank you very much, Your Worship.
Thanks, Chris.
I trust everybody can hear me clearly.
Are we okay? Yep, we can hear you.
And should I share my schedule or my screen with the presentation, or is it up in the council chambers?
You can share your screen. They can see you guys, so.
Okay, perfect. I just need permission to share my screen.
So just as Chris is getting set up, anyone who's watching at home, I'll just point out that the public presentation is on pages 18 to 29 of the agenda. It'll probably be difficult to see the screen from home, so if you look at those pages, anyone who's watching at home, you'll see what we're seeing.
Can everybody see the presentation?
You're on mute, so you need to give them instructions.
Yes, we can see it. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Well, Madam Mayor and members of council, it's a real pleasure to be with you this evening to present the findings from the service delivery report that Strategy Corps was commissioned to undertake on behalf of the municipality. And so what we're going to present to you tonight are the findings and the recommendations from our service delivery review. The opportunities, we identified a number of opportunities for improvement through the course of the service delivery review project, and we're going to focus in on high potential service delivery improvements in four areas: strategic governance, technological modernization, organizational design of the municipality, and then looking at some go-forward options around contracted services and when and how to deploy contracted services as part of your toolkit for delivering municipal services to your residents. And so I will take you through each of these, and as we go through them, or after we go through the presentation, happy to take questions from members of council. Before we get into the specific details around the recommendations we're making in each of those four areas that I just described, it's important for us to say at the outset that the recommendations that are outlined in this report around organizational structure and talent, they're important to the long-term success of the municipality, but their implementation, particularly our recommendations around organizational restructuring within the corporation, first must be enabled by a modernized IT infrastructure. And we'll talk about some of the what we believe to be some of the near-term priorities and quick wins around IT infrastructure. No doubt COVID, as everybody's experienced, has really underscored the importance of digital delivery of services and having the digital backbone necessary to enable the delivery of services. And so a lot of what we're focused in on here today does have some preconditions on it around investments in needed IT infrastructure in order to unlock some of the opportunities that are in our recommendations. And so the sequencing of the recommendations we're making very much require some building of capacity, mostly around modernization of the technology and its deployment. And then shifting the focus after some of those base pieces are in place to looking at strengthening the governance and the organizational design of the place to deliver greater service quality and overall efficiency. So I will start with some of the technological modernization recommendations that we are making. As I said, these are preconditions to some of the other recommendations that we're making specifically with respect to the structure of the organization and its governance. And so what we learned from the current state in our assessment of the organization is that you are still reliant to a high degree on processes and technologies that are outdated, which limits your ability to realize the efficiencies, particularly in terms of staff time, that are inherent in using more, being less reliant on paper-based processes and using more digitized processes to enable service delivery. And so in terms of our recommendation here is that, you know, the municipality has to undergo a digital transformation based on two key pillars. One is a comprehensive strategy to assess the current state and deliver value based on your business needs around IT. And when you're thinking about delivering new digitally enabled services, it's going to be important that you undertake an agile process to deliver that, so that you're taking off manageable bite-sized chunks, learning quickly, adjusting, and then going on to the next piece that is important for investment. So the comprehensive strategy involves the development of an IT master plan that clearly articulates what the IT goals are for the municipality, and then assesses how digital tools will help achieve those goals, and particularly prioritizing data collection, stronger information management, and facilitating greater information sharing. And that's true amongst staff within the four walls of the corporation, but also with your end users and customers who rely on the services that you deliver. And being agile means that you want to start where your greatest pain points are, and we'll talk about some of those specific recommendations in a moment. Finding a specific solution, implementing that solution to begin to realize the certainly the process efficiencies and the service delivery efficiencies that you can realize from the deployment of that technology. And in order to enable this agile approach to bringing in technology and replacing outdated paper-based processes, we are recommending that you bring a dedicated IT resource in-house We are recommending that you start with a work order management system to realize efficiencies in your workflow, particularly in public works. And you look to prioritize where you can digitize and automate existing processes that are manual and paper-based. And so the short-term recommendations are presented in terms of enabling an agile delivery and integration of greater digital tools in your service delivery are presented on this slide. The IT hire will certainly help to address pain points around IT planning. You don't currently have that capacity in the organization. It supports implementation capacity. As you know, you do contract with the county for some services around IT, but it's not sufficient to support the kind of transformation and implementation of technology that is required to modernize your service delivery. And it also means that you have somebody on the ground who can help with IT support. A good chunk of what's going to happen as you bring in technology to replace outdated processes is change management, of which having IT support within the organization to support the change management that's required to help people become comfortable in using these new systems is absolutely essential to realizing the value that these systems have to offer. One of the areas where we're suggesting you start in terms of specifics is around a work order software system through the implementation of a computerized maintenance management system to track and report on reactive and preventative maintenance. Right now, this process is largely paper-based, and records aren't being captured as well as they can. This is also essential for long-term asset management and the effective management of your assets, including their maintenance and their replacement over time. This software is easy to find in the market. Many municipalities of your size already have computerized work order software in place that they're using, particularly in their public works functions. And this will be critical to addressing some of the key pain points that we noticed in terms of responsiveness to service requests, enhancing cross-departmental collaboration and information sharing, tracking the work that you are doing and using that to inform your asset management practices, being able to have data to analyze in order to prioritize the work that does get done and prioritizing budgets as a result. And so, you know, this is going to require an upfront investment in the technology itself, but you will realize certainly efficiency savings and have better information around which for management and council to make decisions about how it prioritizes its spending in this particular area. The last piece, which is also related, is automating timesheet entry. Right now, timesheet entry is a manual process. And we're recommending that you implement a single source timesheet and payroll management software that employees use directly to input their time into the payroll system. Right now, it's reliant on a clerk within finance to manually enter paper-based timesheets. That costs you somewhere in the neighborhood of about $12,000 annually in staff time, almost a third of that person's annual salary. And moving to an automated timesheet entry system not only makes economic sense, but it also frees up that clerk's time to focus on higher value-added activities in terms of servicing customers within the organization and customers in terms of residents who are coming to the municipality and need support. So those are the specific IT recommendations, and your IT evolution is going to take time. There's certainly some places where we think you can start now to realize some efficiency gains within the organization. And it's important that these things are undertaken because no doubt, as you observed through our current state report, you know, you're a very lean organization, particularly in public works, and whatever you can do to automate key functions within the organization means you're freeing up capacity for your people to focus on those higher value-added things. In terms of strategic governance, we looked at this in some detail, and our findings from the current state report were that Mississippi Mills is in need of coordinated and more institutionalized strategic planning across all layers of the organization. And I know you're in the process of developing your strategic plan now. And what we want to do is, you know, once you have that very important milestone accomplished, making sure that that continues to be the North Star in terms of how council and administration work together to prioritize its policy development and its budgeting and its annual work planning as well. And so we have a recommendations around how to do that by setting up a framework that is understood by everybody and ensures that strategy continues to be a key focus of the organization, as well as marrying that with better enterprise risk management approaches. But we want to align the organization with the priorities set in that corporate, set in your corporate strategic plan, and diffuse through the framework. And we're also, want to see council invest in itself and it, and your growth and development as governors of the organization. A municipal organization, no matter how big or small, is a complex organization, and you have fundamental roles to play from an oversight and a fiduciary perspective. And so we have a specific recommendation around that. We think the suite of recommendations we're making around governance will lead to changes that are sometimes difficult to quantify, but you'll no doubt notice better guidance on priorities for the administration and community, more effective decision making, particularly on allocating the scarce resources that residents entrust you with, a better role understanding and leveraging the strengths of council staff and the committees in making decisions and driving outcomes for the municipality. And better decision making does result in more focus, and at the end of the day yields more efficient and effective service delivery. So in terms of some of the specific recommendations, we are recommending a corporate strategic planning framework that has a clear cycle with respect to how the strategic plan is developed and how it is operationalized within the organization, and how you as council are apprised of the progress and are able to critically review your progress and make any changes necessary. Because a strategic plan should be a living document, not something that happens every 4 years and gets forgot about in the time in between. And so we're recommending a cycle that begins with you developing your plan, and then in the third and fourth quarters of every year, or at every quarter, and then particularly in the last quarter of every year, taking a critical review of where you're at, and using that as the basis for thinking about how you're going to prioritize your budget making and your policy making in the upcoming year, all linked back to the strategy. The other piece that we're looking at is enterprise risk management. And as I shared with you before, it's not usual at this time for municipalities of your size to have an enterprise risk management policy and risk register to guide your thinking around the big issues that you have to manage as a municipality. We are recommending that you do invest in a policy and that you integrate risk management as a key frame that you have staff build into their reports to you, so you can understand what risks are associated with anything that comes before council, particularly the big strategic items, and how those risks are going to be managed and mitigated to ensure success. The other piece that we're also recommending is that in that fourth quarter, holding a special council meeting so that you can take a look back at the year that was in the delivery of the strategic plan, and again cast an eye forward to the strategic plan, what changes you may need to make, and how that filters through your policy making and your budget making decisions going into the next year. There's a few additional kind of recommendations we're making around, once you have your strategic plan in place, aligning your council agendas around the strategic plan and the items that you have said are of strategic importance, focusing on things that have actions associated with them, and prioritizing action items over information items. We're also recommending that staff be aligning the reports, not just with an assessment of the risks inherent in whatever they're bringing forward to you, but also the relevance of the matters that they're bringing to you in relation to the strategic plan. This is important too, because as custodians of the strategic plan, you as council will want to make sure that, you know, there's always going to be stuff that isn't related to the strategic plan that you have to deal with as a matter of legislation or just, you know, overall good governance. But to the extent possible, you want to be in control of ensuring that those items that you put in the strategic plan are the ones that you're driving to fruition for the municipality. The other thing, the last piece around strategic governance is around your committees and the work that they do. We believe that it's going to be important for council to develop, adopt, and implement an overarching general bylaw on the non-statutory advisory committees that you have, and to set out clear expectations of them, what they're to work on, how that direction is to be set from council, how they're to report back to council, how those things that you do ask them to do align with what you're trying to achieve from a strategic perspective. In the current state, we got the sense that nobody's overly happy with the way the committee structure is working. We believe that having a clear policy and a clear eye to, you know, which committees you're setting up, why you're setting them up, what you're asking them to do, and how you're going to hold them accountable for what it is that they're going to do, is an important thing for council to do. And I think what you'll notice is that everybody will be happier in terms of the committee work that they are doing, and you're getting more out of your committees as a result. The other piece that, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, so I prematurely said this was the last recommendation. The other recommendation that we have around strategic governance is for you yourselves as counselors to be investing in your own ongoing education and professional development. We're recommending that you work as a council together to develop an annual education plan for yourself. And this is not meant to say that you're not doing your job as counselors. Far from it. You know, the good practice, the leading practice in private sector and not-for-profit organizations is that boards invest in themselves. They invest in their own education so that they're stronger governors and stewards of their organizations as a result. And there are a number of things where, you know, it never hurts for a refresher on how you do financial management or risk management, or, you know, or to engage in education around, we are going to be digitizing and modernizing our service delivery using technology. What does that mean? What kinds of things do we have to keep an eye out for? How, you know, when does it make for, you know, better service delivery? What do we have to worry about in terms of actually detracting from the quality of service delivery? Taking advantage of this and building this into your time as council is something we would be encouraging you to do, and it helps you be even more effective governors of the place and in delivering your strategic priorities at the end of the day. The other thing we looked at carefully, and we've made a lot of substantive recommendations on, is looking at the organization and whether or not it was optimally structured. You know, our view was it wasn't optimally structured. And we took a principles-based approach to looking at how we could restructure the organization to ensure that there was better accountability in it, there are more appropriate spans of control, that corporate functions were elevated to the level of corporate functions because they're shared across departments. Organizing and aligning like with like functions so that you get the benefit of having functions in the same division and being able to cross deploy some people to enable better service delivery and create additional capacity. We are recommending that you undergo an organizational redesign based on those principles I just talked about and are presented on the right hand of the slide here. And that involves creating 5 new positions in finance, IT, strategic initiative support, HR, and recreation programming. and over time reprofiling 11 positions within the organization to help fund and support some of these new positions that we're asking you to create. We're asking you to create these not because we're in the business of saying you need more people, but we've noticed real strategic deficits within the organization that in order for you to continue to be a lean organization, you actually need to bring in people to perform these key strategic functions. And it's also going to be critical to the long-term sustainability of the organization itself. We are also recommending that over time that you move from the number of departments that you have now to 4 consolidated departments as presented here on the slide. One that would bring in all corporate services functions from finance, HR, IT under one roof, bringing development and infrastructure services into one division, bringing community and culture into one division, and then fire services obviously continues to be a standalone division for you. And in terms of those, so that strategic capacity that we talked about, and the deficits that we noticed, you know, again, we believe that you should prioritize the creation of a deputy treasurer position, particularly, you know, there's a lot of modernization of your finance function that will involve digitization that needs to happen. Deputy treasurer is going to be key to making that happen. Your IT support and implementation coordinator, so that IT function, and then bringing in somebody to support the strategic initiatives and communications. You need that communications function. I think COVID has underscored the importance of the quality of your communications internally and externally. And with the strategic plan, having somebody who can work with the CAO to coordinate departmental efforts to realize the strategic plan is really going to be important for you to do. This does come with an additional net cost, as presented on the slide here. We've done our best to, once some of the IT pieces are implemented, freeing up capacity within the organization to help offset some of these costs. But again, these will cure some real strategic deficits within the organization that will make you stronger and more resilient over the long term. Lastly, before I turn it over for questions, we were asked to look at contracted services and using winter control as a particular case study. And it's important because, you know, governments and municipal governments are no different, always have this option, in terms of how they deliver services, whether you do it yourself by hiring your own people or whether or not you contract it out. And when is it the right call to contract it out? We looked at it in the context of winter maintenance. We noticed that your spending isn't over and above what your peers spend on winter control. You know, we think, you know, the development of a clear policy around winter control is needed, and having clear service levels are really important before you determine whether or not you need to contract out more, or perhaps more appropriately, look at whether or not there is a sharing of that service that can be done with your neighboring municipalities or the county. As you know, winter control is perhaps one of the most visible public services you provide. People often wonder why, blades go up where they do and blades go down where they do. And it all comes down to, you know, a service level differences between a county road and a local road, and, you know, who's hired to do what. What time that happens. We lay out a framework to assist you in figuring out going forward where it makes sense to contract. But in this particular instance, we think it's worth looking at whether or not there are opportunities to collaborate with the county and some of your neighbors within the county to rationalize how winter control is delivered to deliver improved performance and to make it, you know, deliver an overall better service for residents and reduce the questioning as to, you know, why blades are up or why blades are down at any particular time. So with that, Your Worship, I'll turn it over for questions. And again, thank you for this opportunity to work with you. It was a great project from our perspective.
Thanks very much, Chris. So can Chris hear me speaking? Can you hear me, Chris?
Can you hear her, Chris?
Not that there's an echo, so not terribly clearly.
Okay, so maybe what we'll do is any questions I have, if you can give them to Chris, that'll...
Sure.
maybe make a little bit more sense. So members of council, any questions or comments to the strategy core team on the presentation we've received? Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. I have questions specifically to the short-term recommendation page, which is, I guess, page 5. And under cost drivers, salary and benefits, does that figure include benefits rather? Oops, benefits as well?
Under page 5, under, can you repeat that one more time, sir?
Yeah, under cost drivers?
Under cost drivers.
You see salary and benefits? I'm assuming that that does include benefits, right?
Does that include benefits?
Yes, we apply 20% of the 20%, okay. Of the salary as benefits to get to a total compensation okay. figure.
Thank you. And also, you've wisely, I think, inserted the word reduce when it comes to service fees. Eliminate. What is there a cost between reduce and eliminate of the 40,000?
So you would reduce your reliance. So what we're trying to articulate there, Councillor, is that you'll reduce your reliance on the service provided by the county. So you can use those dollars and apply those dollars to hiring your own in-house IT support.
Do I have one more?
Go ahead.
Okay. One more under the cost drivers, specifically where it addresses on two lines, annual license fees. 30,000 and 10,000 annually. I'm assuming, and please correct me, that we're not paying those now, but they would be add-ons to whatever other expenses we've incurred.
Yes, so you don't currently have a computerized work order system or computerized timesheet entry, so there are licensing fees. So we provided an estimate. We're vendor agnostic, so we didn't say which system to use, but those would be an estimate of the licensing fees you'd have to pay on an annual basis to use the software. These are always things that you can try to drive down through negotiation when you go to market for the solutions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Maiden.
I really like this summary that you provided. I think you've almost exceeded our expectations in what you provided us with. I know you did for me. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about our HR requirements and what you recommend there.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Councillor. So we do set out from our view, what should be prioritized in terms of some new hires. And I know there's advice coming from staff later this evening about how they see the order of priority in terms of some of the organizational design changes that we believe are necessary. We don't recommend new positions lightly. We try to make sure that we exhaust exhaust looking at processes and other activities that can streamline and make better use of available capacity. But what we noticed is in the context of Mississippi Mills is you're very lean. You're missing some key strategic functions that are necessary because you are growing and you are facing changing resident demand for services. And hence some of our recommendations around a deputy treasurer position is going to be critical because you got work there, not only in terms of automating your processes, but long term financial planning and asset management planning. Those types of things are going to be absolutely critical. IT and communications as well, because IT is the key to unlocking a lot of what we're recommending in terms of the reorganization and the freeing up capacity of existing staff within the organization and communications is a critical piece as well. And what I would say is no matter which way we sliced it, when we looked at you as a standalone municipality, when we looked at you in the context of your peers, the same message kept on coming back. You're not fat. You're missing, again, you have some deficits within the organization. You're getting great value for money in certain areas, and you have to keep an eye on that, because while it's great value for money today, there is wear and tear on staff, particularly in public works. You've got probably the leanest public works department relative to any of the peer comparators that we looked at. And so as you grow and you get residents moving from the city to Mississippi Mills, and you know, COVID changes expectations around service delivery, you do have to keep an eye on, you know, making sure that you have the right organizational structure, the right skills and competencies in place to deal with the pressures that you're facing, and you're also looking at ways of bolstering capacity where that is needed to continue to deliver the high quality of service that you do.
Thank you very much,
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Thank you. Just to echo Councillor Ferguson's remarks about fees and. When I go through this, I see it costs $12,000 to do the payroll a year extra. And it's a $10,000 fee just for the service, for the electronic service to do it electronically. That's not a big savings in my mind. So that's just a comment, because it was a very expensive report. In the full report, you said that winter control was done really good in Mississippi Mills. I'm wondering why, and we have a lean staff. I was wondering why you think we should keep continuing on with this, or just, and we do have a service, we do have a minimum standard for moving snow, which is 5 millimeters or 5 to 7. So just on that point, could you elaborate on the snow plowing one, please?
Sorry, I didn't get the last piece of that question.
The whole question? Pardon? Could you elaborate on why we think we should expand our snow plowing services, or look for more or less when we already do a really good job at it and very efficient?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we did speak with the county to explore their interest in whether or not this could be a shared service, or maybe even a service that either Mississippi Mills takes on behalf of the county, or whether the county takes it on behalf of Mississippi Mills and its other local municipal partners. We just believe that there's an opportunity for efficiencies there, particularly from a contracting out perspective, if you're going to market together as opposed to all putting out your own tenders for this service. You know, so from a pure cost perspective, going to market with one or two contracts as opposed to any number of contracts based on the county and the lower tiers makes a whole lot of sense. You get the economies of scale, so you get a scale and you get the purchasing power of that. The other thing that you should look at, it's not just about going to market and trying to purchase these things together, or, you know, saying I can do it more efficiently if you contract it to me. Also looking at where there may be opportunities to harmonize policy in terms of winter control would be another area where, you know, that it would make it a lot easier if there is some low-hanging fruit to harmonize policy. That makes it a lot easier to go to market to get a contractor to support you in that. So that's why we're asking you to look at it a little bit further. We think there are greater opportunities for efficiency and just a better overall resident end user quality experience with that service.
Because there is a unwillingness of the county to expand their snow plowing services. I just wondered why you went through the whole.
Yeah, they weren't overly enthusiastic when we spoke to them either. But, I believe that the next wave in municipal efficiency is going to be looking to do more and more shared services. If you look, down the road from you, and we, we had the honor of doing it for the Frontenac municipalities, but we found $700,000 in annual savings for those municipalities simply by doing a better job of sharing and coordinating service delivery, particularly in the public works area. So, you know, I think the county would be well advised to be thinking seriously about those types of initiatives.
Thank you. I just don't think this one's saving us $700,000. Thank you.
Councillor Dalgety.
I'm on page 5, short-term recommendations again. So I'm looking at the original rollout and launch and implementation of the CMMS and the timesheet software. I understand that would be done by the vendors. Are you recommending that the dedicated IT resource be put in place before then, involved in planning, or wait until all this stuff is put in place and launched and then bring an IT resource to maintain?
I think for the work order software and the timesheet entry, that's something you can launch concurrently with looking for an IT resource. These are fairly standard practices in other municipalities. It's fairly standard software to get in the marketplace. I don't think you necessarily have to wait to undertake those two opportunities for an IT person or for an IT master plan to be in place. That's why we did prioritize it and we have identified it as a short-term recommendation. This is kind of pro forma in most municipalities of your side, and so we see no reason not to be able to pursue all three of these things concurrently.
In terms of hardware to run all this software, I'm just looking at, would that be all implemented by vendors as well? There's going to be a platform that all this is going to sit on that's going to be implemented organization-wide. So I'm just looking at the timing of all this.
So if I heard the question correctly, was whether or not there would be hardware needed and the timing to execute all of this? Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, so when, you know, most of the hardware you should already have in place. When it comes to the work order software, when we speak about hardware, we're mostly referring to having tablets in the field so that that folks have access to the system and can upload their work orders or download their work orders with that piece of equipment to help them. We're talking minor hardware here in terms of tablets or laptops, things of that nature to outfit staff. In terms of implementation timing, you should reasonably look to have something like this in place, you know, kind of 12 to 18 months. That includes the time you'll need to procure a solution and get that solution deployed, get people trained up on it, and then being fully utilized in the field to do that. Just to build on that, I know one counselor noted that there isn't much of a savings between on the timesheet entry. That $12,000 is just for that one clerk position that is responsible for manually entering people's timesheets. It's a very conservative estimate. We didn't estimate the time savings it would have for actually and the staff who actually have to fill out the timesheets. Timesheet entry a lot easier on there, and certainly a whole lot quicker. And never mind too what the efficiency savings or gains are going to be in terms of having more accurate data that is captured. You reduce the risk of manual transcription error by having an automated timesheet system as well. So this is if we were to stack all those kinds of efficiencies on it, the efficiency savings would be even greater than what we're projecting here.
Okay. Councillor Holmes.
Thank you for the presentation. And I do have a question around shared services, and in particular in how it relates to software programs. And I'm thinking like something like the work order software or the automated timesheet entry. Do you see any efficiencies if there was an opportunity for various municipalities to go together to engage the same vendor in purchasing that type of software? I'm wondering if there's an efficiency that way. And also in terms of the staff who work with that software, you build up an expertise in the area. So if a timesheet person in one municipality has a problem, they can actually talk to the one in the next municipality to say, hey, you know, how did you solve this problem? Thank you.
So, Councillor, if I heard the question correctly, the first part of the question was whether or not there are any efficiencies to be had if you went to market with another municipality or two or three to secure a solution. Absolutely. There absolutely would be. Being able to go to market and have greater purchasing power would certainly put you in a better position to negotiate with the vendors that are out there. And I apologize, I didn't catch the second part of the question.
Yeah.
So my second part of the question really relates to efficiency using that software. My thoughts are, if two or three municipalities are using the same software, the individuals who are using it within those municipalities build up an expertise, so they could call on one another for advice when they have problems, instead of having to go to the vendor and perhaps pay for that advice. I'm just wondering if there's any thoughts if that's an efficiency or not.
You know, certainly there could be a counselor. Any time that you aggregate certain functions, so let's start with any time that you're going out and purchasing the same software, you're in a better position to negotiate with the vendors. Any time that you aggregate kind of the back office functions within a municipality or across municipalities to support this. So if you decided to share IT resources, let's say, I mean people resources, there's an ability to spread the cost across a greater base and still realize it. You know, what is happening in a lot of places, in a lot of counties in particular, is that they're providing a lot of the back office, for lack of a back office functions, as shared services to their lower tier municipal partners. Whether that's IT, to an extent you have with Lana County right now, or HR, or purchasing, strategic sourcing, those types of things. That's becoming more and more of a feature of a service that upper tiers are providing to lower tiers. It's also true that municipalities will provide service to other municipalities, they'll have one or two clients for which they'll provide the IT services, or they'll provide the purchasing services, things of that nature. So there's definitely opportunities. The more you share and the more you collaborate across municipal boundaries, you're able to stretch your dollars better.
Thank you.
Are there other questions for Chris while we have him in corporate services or corporate strategy core here for us? Did you have another one? Yep, please feel free.
Thank you. It's I have one more question around the efficiency savers and savings with the automatic timesheet. I'm wondering, or automated timesheet. I'm wondering if you've ever done savings on the upstream that from using a automated timesheet, like when you need to pull data for budgets and whatnot, I know from example from past experience that it's a lot easier to get it from an automated system than from from the manual system. Have you ever done any work on that to talk? And if you could you just comment on it, please?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're starting with timesheet entry. We also know that in your finance shop, being able to get batch entries from the bank when payments are made through banks for municipal taxes is not an easy transition from one system to another. It actually has to be downloaded, then I believe key entered into your own system. There's another area that, you know, we're hoping through the investment in a deputy treasurer, you're going to be able to automate even more of those processes. But, you know, one of the areas where most municipalities struggle is around information management, and that includes records retention and the ability to digitize records to make it easier to search. Archives and records is particularly important in planning and building departments. It's also critical in infrastructure departments as well. When you're managing assets, and we've been in municipalities where moving to more sophisticated software and digitizing current paper records saves tens of thousands of dollars in person hours every year, because what you'll find is a lot of people, not just clerks, but managers and directors, spend a lot of time trying to find records that should be reasonably accessible. They spend a lot of time trying to find those things in order to either push a file forward or to answer a resident's inquiry or deal with their complaint. Part of the IT master plan, hence why we're very much focused on data collection, information management, and information sharing at being at the heart of those things, because those are your business requirements, is needed. And there's much more than what we've been able to look at in this short study to be capitalized on by the municipality.
Thank you.
Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. Just two more. Your recommendation in reference to four core departments, do you see, and I wouldn't prejudge job descriptions, but certainly there would, with additional responsibilities of the new four, I can only assume there would be salary increases along with that. Is that what you would perceive?
Do you mind just breaking that question down for me really quickly? I don't need it repeated by the councillor. I didn't pick up between the councillor speaking and yourself speaking.
Do you want me to repeat it?
You're suggesting four departments. Those people are going to have additional responsibilities. Do you foresee or have you projected salary increases for those four positions that you're suggesting? Or four department heads?
We haven't. There may be some refinement that you need to do based on how the final organizational structure ends up coming into place.
Okay, thank you. And my last one, you had mentioned, and there had been discussion specifically to upper tier opportunities and sharing. Could you give us some good examples, not necessarily today, but could that be included at some point in time, of examples that you have seen in your work over the last 6 months or year of those opportunities for savings and sharing with upper tier?
So just so I've heard the question correctly, was the question whether or not we see opportunities for savings for Mississippi Mills if there was sharing with the upper tier?
Yes. The upper tier, Miss and Lanark County, but also examples that you may have, and you made reference to Frontenac. If there was references that you had or examples with other upper tier I guess, upper tiers. Could you provide some examples of those at some future time or some time that's convenient?
Yes, I mean, so we're identifying opportunities for savings and efficiencies across a bunch of things. You know, in Elgin, for instance, with Elgin Economic Development, we actually have recommended that they merge their economic development function with the City of St. Thomas because they're well placed and they have a fairly sophisticated organization that yields savings. You know, shared purchasing and service sharing in Frontenac is kind of what is driving most of the savings in Frontenac County, the $700,000. The big areas are if you can collaborate on the very least on purchasing, particularly in public works, there are significant savings to be had. If there are back office functions that you can avoid building your own back office because somebody else has capacity in their back office, so that's IT, HR, to some elements of finance, procurement, those are ripe opportunities to get the quality of the service and the value of the service you're looking for without having to build up your own infrastructure to do it, or at least, you know, deferring it to a point when you're of a sufficient size where it makes sense for you to have your own infrastructure. So that's another big area of opportunity. And then there are other opportunities too that were raising with a number of local and upper tier municipalities around. Look at those functions that are legislated and are, you know, say what you will, they're common across any municipality. So building services, building inspection services, that's regulated by the province, including the timelines. You're not going to get much difference from municipality to municipality. A lot of municipalities are struggling to find resources in that respect. There's an opportunity to share there, you know, have somebody be the building department lead and provide the services to other municipalities. And then lastly, you know, other areas where we know there are savings, and the issue is going to be the political will to do so, is things around fire services. There are real efficiencies we believe to be had through shared fire services or an amalgamation of fire services. That's always a difficult one to address. It can become a little bit more thorny too if you have a volunteer force, but you know, certainly that's another area that we're identifying in the work that we're doing across the province as a promising area for enhanced efficiency and cost savings.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I guess the big word in the whole thing that you have just addressed, which I appreciate, is willingness. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and Councillor, to your point, you know, in hindsight, some sort of intermunicipal study between Frontenac or between Lanark and its local municipal partners, that's what would be needed to really figure out what the order of magnitude and the scope of any efficiencies would be. And it's too bad that the county didn't see that as an opportunity for the use of their own modernization money.
Thank you again.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing not, I want to thank you, Chris, very much for your presentation, and Connor. Thank you very much for being here with us yet again this evening. And I'm going to look for a mover and seconder for the recommendation in your agenda, and that is at the deputation by Chris Loretto, and I'm going to change it to Connor Funky Fung from Strategy Corps regarding the Service Delivery Review Final Report, and that it be received for information. Councillor Delgany, and a seconder, Councillor Holmes, thank you. All in favor? Thank you very much. Thanks again, Chris, and thanks very much, Connor.
Yeah, thank you, Council.
Take care, stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good job, yeah.
Yes, thanks a lot, Jen. That was great. Do you need us to take a little break, or are you good? Okay. The things we'd learn how to do, eh, in the times of COVID. So next on the agenda, we have the second presentation of the evening. We have Kathy Peacock from the Library Board here. I believe she's in the atrium there. And she's welcome to come and... Hi, Kathy. Oh, Kathy and Christine. Hi, Christine. There we go. So welcome. Thank you for joining us. Just give us a sec. We'll have Deputy Mayor Minnelli back with us. And thank you. I could hear that you were out there in our first presentation. That took a little bit of time. It was a lot of information for us. So whenever you're ready, feel free to go ahead. You've got 10 minutes, and I'll let you know. I'll give you a little wave when we're at 8 minutes, so you know how to...
I think I'm quicker than
that. You're quicker than that. Okay. Yeah. Feel free to take a whole time.
Okay. Good evening, and I'd like to thank you for this chance to speak to you this evening. We welcome this opportunity to express our views and opinions regarding the Howard Allen cost-sharing agreement as it relates to library services provided to our community. The concerns that we express have to do with ensuring that we work in compliance with the Ontario Public Library Act. The inclusion of public libraries in the Howard Allen agreement has caused a lot of debate over the years, as there are conflicting views on legislation affecting the agreement. While the Municipal Act does allow for the establishment of an agreement with another municipality for services, entering into such an agreement for library services when the municipality already established a public library is in conflict with the Public Library Act. The PLA states that if a municipality already has a library board, then any agreement for the sharing of library services must be established directly between the two boards. As a result of past disagreements in this regard, and as a result of advice received in 2016 from representatives of the Southern Ontario Library Service and Municipal Council resolution, a cost-sharing agreement for library services was established between the boards of the Mississippi Mills Public Library and the Carleton Place Public Library. This agreement, which was ratified in 2016 and in 2018, states that the Library Board agrees to recognize and support the terms of the Howard Allen cost-sharing agreement under the current terms agreed to by the contracting municipalities. The two boards are to meet to review and ratify the agreement each calendar year. And I believe it was felt at the time that the agreement would bring the libraries into compliance with the Public Library Act. The current Mississippi Mills Public Library Board and staff continue to question the legality of the inclusion of library services under the umbrella of the Howard Allen Agreement, as we feel the document agreed to previously by the two boards merely attempts to support the misinterpretation and violation of the Public Library Act. This seems to be reinforced by more recent advice from the Southern Ontario Library Service expressing the opinion that any library service contract between municipalities with established public libraries should be established directly between those library boards. Before the Library Board can determine whether it's feasible to continue ratifying the previously established agreement in future, we have approached representatives of the Ministry of Heritage, Sport, Tourism and Culture Industries for a definitive response from them to guide us in our decision making. The following information is taken from Municipal Councillor's Public Library Handbook, and the board's financial responsibilities are clearly laid out in the Public Library Act. The library boards must determine how much money the library needs to operate and meet community needs, provide council with estimates of all sums required during the year for the purposes by the board, advocate with council for needed funding, demonstrate accountability to council, the province, and the community, and to act with due diligence, honesty, and in good faith, and in the best interests of the corporation. Reciprocal borrowing agreements allow residents free access to use the participating library services. Through reciprocal borrowing agreements, residents do not have to pay non-resident fees or contribute tax dollars to cost-sharing agreements. The rationale for a reciprocal agreement is that if a community is paying for library service, access to a neighboring system should be reciprocal without additional and redundant fees. Howard Allen was asked if other cost-sharing agreements include library services when he made a presentation to council in September. He mentioned Tay Valley, Drummond, and Montague. These communities do not have libraries, so they do need to sign service agreements for library service. Howard Allen also mentioned Lanark Highlands. Lanark Highlands residents have not had to pay resident fees in Mississippi Mills for many years, and they've just signed a reciprocal borrowing agreement with Perth and District Public Library. We have also signed a reciprocal borrowing agreement with Perth this year. Reciprocal borrowing agreements are the future for public libraries. For example, all of the municipalities in the Niagara region signed a regional reciprocal borrowing agreement in 2018. If Mississippi Mills and Carleton Place weren't included in this cost-sharing agreement, we would pursue a reciprocal borrowing agreement with Carleton Place. A reciprocal borrowing agreement would certainly be useful for Carleton Place this time as they are undergoing renovations. And with a reciprocal borrowing agreement in place, we would happily allow Carleton Place residents to use our library system for free. That's really all we have to tell you tonight. We are waiting for a response from the ministry, and we'll notify you when we do get that. And I'd like to thank you for allowing us to attend and for listening to our concerns. Do you have any questions?
Thanks very much, Kathy. Are there questions or comments from council members? Councillor Girard.
Sorry.
That's okay. Through the chair, I've got actually three, I guess, but I'll start with one. Do you know any other library boards that are in a similar situation as to what we have?
None that I'm aware.
Okay, and do you think there's any crossover members, people who actually use both the libraries right now?
I'm sure that many of the people that are reported as using Carleton Place probably use both and vice versa. But we don't have the stats to track that.
Okay.
Which ones have, which ones use both libraries.
Okay. And I've been looking at the numbers that we've been presented, and I guess I'm curious about how the board is actually to be independent. It's sort of an arm's length from council. Is that correct? Like, we're not able to tell the library board how to proceed with the with what they want to do at the library. We're basically presenting them with the money that's been collected on as a levy against the taxes across the whole municipality.
The municipality is the major funder of the public library, but the library is governed by the Public Library Act, which is an Ontario government, and it was set out to protect libraries and to provide to ensure that all Ontarians will always have access to public library service.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you, Kathy, for the information. Could you just expand a little on your reciprocal borrowing agreement? I was trying to write it down and I ran out of spent time, but could you just refresh me again on that?
Reciprocal borrowing agreements have been in existence for years, and it's a way for public libraries to cooperate, allowing our citizens to go from, especially when we have neighboring communities, the citizens from one library, if they have a card for Mississippi Mills, can go to Perth, show their municipal or their Mississippi Mills card, and use their services free of charge. And vice versa, people from Perth can come to our library and use the services, take out books, whatever they want to do. A huge number of public libraries use reciprocal borrowing agreements, especially when you have smaller communities that then can share their resources. We also have interlibrary loan there. We send free of charge library books to the other libraries that are a little further afield sometimes, but it's the same idea, just that then we're sending the books there and they send books to us. With a reciprocal agreement, the people can go browse the libraries, use the services there, come back. So they're really good for every community borders somewhere with another community. So ones that are closer, if you can establish those agreements, they can go back and forth and you don't have the issue. So our libraries are the perfect example of where that would be really beneficial.
Thank you. And I understand, if I wrote it correctly, that it was 2019 that we established it with Perth. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Councillor Maiden.
Through the chair, Kathy, are there any other benefits to having a reciprocal agreement with another library board? Can you take advantage of shared buying or that sort of thing? Would an agreement cover that thing or something like that, or is it more for residents?
It's more for the library services. It would be a lot more involved to get into that. That would be more the Southern Ontario Library Services. Sometimes we could approach them to do bulk purchasing for us, and then you would purchase an order through them. That's more something that's established to work that type of thing.
Thank you.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Thank you. You said that it's a federal act that looks after the libraries and the municipality.
It's a provincial act.
Ontario Provincial Act. I'm sure there's a document that goes with that act. And
yes,
do we meet all the criteria like distance for our residents?
Our library is an accredited Ontario library, which means the staff have worked really hard to make sure we meet all of the standards set out by the Ontario Public Library Accreditation Committee. We meet all of the standards for minimum distances or maximum distances to provide that access to our residents. So we're well within all of the guidelines set out by the governing bodies.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Holmes.
Thank you so much. I'm kind of curious, have you had any discussion with the Carleton Place Library about having a reciprocal agreement outside the Howard Allen agreement?
No, I think that would be putting the cart before the horse.
Thank you. Councillor Maiden.
Just to follow up on Deputy Mayor Minnelli's question, I understand there's a a guide to library services that's published by the province, and it sets out a service that if you're going to provide library services, they have to be within, what, 45 minutes away from residents?
I'm trying to remember what the number is. We are well within all of the guidelines. Is it 25?
45
minutes. 45? Yeah, so 45 minutes.
Myself, I've taken a look at a lot of the different areas that have been mentioned in the past that are closer to the Carlton Place Center. And the difference in traveling between those centers and Carlton Place or those centers and the Elmont Public Library, not one of them was more than 8 minutes. Most were 2 to 4 minutes difference by car.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Holmes?
The guidelines you're talking about, can they be distributed to us? Are they manageable? They're not huge. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a big file, but it's certainly...
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Kathy or Christine while we have them here this evening? Okay, well, we know where to find you if we think of other things.
Thank you very much.
You for your presentation. I appreciate it. I'm looking for a mover and seconder for the motion that the delegation by Kathy Peacock, Library Board Chair, regarding the cost-sharing agreement be received for information this evening. Councillor Maiden, Councillor Ferguson, all in favor? Thank you. Thanks again, Kathy. So our third presentation tonight is Amanda Etherington, and she's the Water Dragon swim team coach. Welcome, Amanda. Thanks for joining us. And you have someone with you?
I do. I have the treasurer of our team, Monica Lynn Terpstra.
Okay.
Good evening, Mayor Lowry and councillors. Thank you for having us tonight. I'm here to speak to you about the importance of our swim team called the Carlton Place Water Dragons. The Carlton Place Water Dragons have been around for 3 decades now and have had thousands of youth come through our team. The Carlton Place Water Dragons, although carry the name, the Carlton Place name, it is a team that represents many smaller municipalities. Mississippi Mills, Beckwith, the Ashton area, Pakenham, and of course Carlton Place. We have had athletes become lifeguards who have served this community working season after season guarding the local beaches, including the Altamont Beach. Athletes who have become swim instructors or coaches locally and nationally. We have had youth who have gone on to become teachers, engineers, and much, much more. We have had athletes represented on both the international competition level and the Canadian trials level. Some Water Dragons are second generation now, having their young children swim with us as they have had such great memories of being a Carlton Place Water Dragon. I, as the head coach of the Carlton Place Water Dragons, live in Ramsey. The past few years, we have been a team that has struggled to stay afloat due to rising rental costs at the pool. We have had to each year ask the Carlton Place Recreation Committee to help us stay afloat by allowing us lesser rates at times, as the Carlton Place pool charges one of the highest rental rates of Eastern Ontario. To give a few examples, the City of Ottawa, for prime time, charges $42 an hour. Belleville, for prime time, charges $50 an hour. Perth, for prime time, charges $50 an hour. Carlton Place, for prime time, charges $62 an hour. Recently, it was brought to our attention that there has been discussion of the possibility of Mississippi Mills removing the cost-sharing subsidy that helps maintain and contribute to the upkeep of the Carlton Place pool. Without this subsidy, Carlton Place would have to increase not only their user fees of Mississippi Mills residents, but would have to make our rental fees go up significantly. Our team will not be able to continue to run under these conditions. This will be a major loss for youth in our community and will have consequences for many athletes who are invested in our team and have been working for many years. COVID-19 in particular has hurt our team immensely. Our team will not survive this cost-cutting measure. I'm going to pass it over to Monica Lynn, who will talk more about the numbers.
Good evening. Thank you for having us this evening. So I've been with the Water Dragons now for 9 years. Two of my kids swim with them, so I've been treasurer now for quite a while. My background is bookkeeping, so that sort of fit. So just to let you know, I'm not sure how many of you are aware of swimming and what it costs. I know I wasn't before I joined. So my oldest daughter who swims, it's $2,800 a year just to swim. And that actually we had to reduce this year over last because of COVID-19 and because of everyone's struggles. On top of your swim fees, that's not all that you pay. There is also travel for meets. There's most meets don't happen in our hometown. Unfortunately, we're either into Ottawa or many other neighboring areas. Go as far as, say, Toronto. Hotels, so forth. There's equipment. You'd be surprised at how expensive bathing suits can be and how quickly they deteriorate. So, you know, just with the meets, travel, and equipment, you're up somewhere around $5,500 a year to have one child swim. I didn't factor in meals. I didn't factor in time away from your job. So it is a very expensive sport. Our pool rental for the 2018 season for our team was $67,000. So that, we feel, is a huge investment and a huge part of the Carlton Place Pool's budget. So I know, and we, as Amanda had said, we've been talking with them year after year about our rental rates and trying to get a better price. We have our children in the water at 5:15 in the morning before school. They swim for 2 hours, 2.5 hours in the morning before they go to school. And those rates, we were able to negotiate a deal last year in January because we were at the point where we just couldn't afford it. They were kind enough to continue it. What we're worried with this cost agreement, this cost sharing agreement, is if it is removed, the town of Carlton Place is going to have to increase our rental rates. And as a team, there's just no way. Parents now, I mean, when you look at $5,500 for your child to do a sport, that's very expensive. But it is a phenomenal sport that keeps our, specifically our young girls, in a bathing suit. How many 16-year-olds are super comfortable running around in almost nothing, really? You know, it keeps their self-esteem, it keeps them healthy, it keeps them engaged. The camaraderie with their teammates, because you spend 16 to 17 hours a week training, you spend a lot of time with these people, including your coach. They become like family. So it would be an enormous impact on our community to lose the team that we have specifically spent, I've spent 9 years really engaging with and building up and encouraging these kids. And a lot of these kids now, my oldest is 16 and she has been swimming since she was, you know, 8. So it's a long haul and she's eager to try to get to that next stage. She's made it to provincials. Everyone's trying to get to, you know, sort of your next level if that's what your goal is. So this cost-sharing agreement, we feel, is extremely important. Again, I am a Ramsey resident as well. I live 5 kilometers from the pool, so it is a good fit. When we chose to move to Carlton Place 18 years ago, we chose here because of the services that were in the Mississippi Mills area. We specifically chose where we are to be a little out of town, but not too far out of town. We looked at the east side. I'm originally from the East Coast. We looked at the east end of Ottawa, and there was no comparison to Carlton Place and Mississippi Mills specifically. So we love it, but I mean, to be able to remove that cost-sharing agreement will be detrimental to the team, for sure. So that's all that I had to say. Any questions?
Well, thank you both for your presentation. I appreciate your time and sharing your experience there. Are there any questions or comments around the table? Councillor Girard.
Thank you, through the chair. You are both from Ramsey. Are you able to tell us approximately how many children or youth are involved with the Water Dragons and how many are actually from Mississippi Mills?
Do you have that number? Okay. I have numbers of kids, but I don't know exactly.
I actually happen to know that this season and last season, the team is actually mainly comprised of Mississippi Mills youth. We have 42 kids this year, which is half of what we've usually had, and I will tell you that at least 36 of those kids live in Mississippi Mills. And these kids are learning the most valuable lessons that they will take with them for the rest of their life. Showing up at 5:15 every morning takes a lot of grit. And if our community loses this, and I, like Monica Lynn, I moved to Ramsey because of the location to the pool. My children have all swam, and we wanted to be only 10 minutes away from the pool because early mornings are rough. And if you have to commute too far in the winter, it makes it that much harder.
Did you go ahead to Councillor Girard? Did you have a follow-up?
My question was, I'm not thinking that the pool is something that I'm interested in getting rid of as well, but we do actually, with our cost sharing, give we gift or grant or pay about $28,000 with absolutely no involvement as to where it goes. As people who are using the pool, if we were to renegotiate and have more involvement with what was actually happening, would you feel that would be an actual benefit?
I think that's a great idea. I really do. I mean, I have to be honest. I've been begging for years for somebody to pay attention to the pool and our team. I used to work at the pool as a pool supervisor. I can tell you I taught aquafit classes. I taught swimming lessons. We live near big bodies of water. It is imperative that we all be invested in that pool to teach our kids how to swim. I can't emphasize that enough.
Okay, that was my answer that I was sort of looking for.
Yeah, I think as a stakeholder, Mississippi Mills should be much more involved in what is going on with the pool, absolutely.
Thank you.
Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you, appreciate it. And I sympathize with your competitive costs. I've been there and done that with four children as well, so I sympathize with that. But looking at it overall, and it was questioned as the numbers, and 36 I think is fairly substantial, and I don't know how many members and team in total, but I think that's pretty substantial. And just again expands on the reason for us to review it in detail, I think, and you've said that before, and yeah, you repeated it, and I think it's important that we review it with our partners and ensuring that everyone gets a fair shot at it all.
Absolutely. I think all stakeholders should be involved in the pool, and that has been one of the things that we have said when we have had to go and negotiate to get better rates, that there's more than just Carlton Place, mm-hmm, you know, at the table. We ourselves, who are big stakeholders in the team, happen to live on Ramsey.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Thank you. I've never been at the pool at 5 in the morning, but I've been there later at night, and I realize that Water Dragons isn't the only activity that takes place there. There's swimming lessons and public hour and all kinds of other stuff, so two children did learn how to swim there too, so it is really important when you live near a body of water to have that. Thank you.
Councillor Dalgety.
You might not be able to answer this, but just your opinion, it sounds like you're involved in a lot of different pools all over the place. And looking at the rates, where Carlton Place would be one of the highest rates, with your involvement in it as working there and as a coach, why do you think that they are the highest compared to other pools in the area?
I think that unfortunately, because of the towns being smaller, the city of Ottawa has many more competitive teams utilizing the pools. They have bigger pools, more lanes. It is a small pool. I think that's part of it. And I think, I don't know that proper research has really been done. We have tried to provide them over and over again with the stats. They don't seem to listen to us. You know, I think that's really what it comes down to. I know it is an aging pool that requires, you know, perhaps a little more work than is being put into it for upkeep. But why do they charge us continually more than everywhere else? I don't know. I actually happened to catch their council meeting a month ago where they said that they had done the research. And, of course, I laughed as I watched it from home because that's just not the case.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from council? Councillor Maiden.
Thanks for coming to tell us about this. As you may know, I'm one of the people who is questioning the cost sharing agreement. But a pool in Mississippi Mills, back in about 2013, they did a recreation study in Mississippi Mills. I'm not sure if you're aware. They call it the Stantec Report. That was the number one on the wish list of Mississippi Mills residents, was for a pool. As a small municipality, we couldn't really afford it, but both Ramsey and Elmont contributed, I think, quite a bit into the building of the pool. And later on, I have a motion coming forward to look into this more. And if you would like to provide us with more information and data on this, I think we'd be happy to accept it. Just a comment, my young cousin was an Olympian on the Canada synchro swim team back in Greece a while ago, and then she went on to Cirque du Soleil. So there is a career after this. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you so much.
Yeah, and like I said, I think we certainly are happy to work with all of you to see, you know, yourselves be more involved in where your dollars are going, or our dollars are going in regards to the pool. We just need those dollars to continue to go to the pool is really it. Thank you for your time.
I think we've got one other question here from Councillor Holmes.
Yeah, I think actually, and as you're talking, I think you and I actually had that conversation when I was out campaigning.
Probably.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, all of us, we really do recognize the value of the pool, and but we also recognize the value of oversight, and as Councillor Maiden was saying, perhaps you can help us with some of that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. I very much appreciate your perspective. And if there's no other comments from council, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you
again. So I'm going to look for a mover and seconder then to for the recommended motion in your agenda package. Thanks very much. That the delegation by Amanda Etherington from the Water Dragons swim team be received for information. Looking for a mover and seconder for that. Councillor Delgany, Councillor Holmes, all in favor? Thank you. So that's the end of our presentations. Just taking a look at how much we have here. Why don't we we've been sitting for over 2 hours, so why don't we take a quick 5-minute break and you can stretch your legs, and we'll be back at 7:45, okay? So quick recess. I'm going to call the meeting back to order, and we are at item K in our agenda, which is the public meeting for a zoning amendment application on Carr Street. So we'll welcome Maggie Yett to join us.
Good Thank you, Mayor Lowry. I will begin with the public meeting procedure and the preamble.
Okay, thank you.
The public meetings today are being heard by council and notice has been given in accordance with the Planning Act. They are statutory public meetings for the purpose of giving the public the opportunity to make representations in respect to the proposed bylaw amendment. If a person or a public body does not make submissions at a public meeting or make written submissions to the municipality of Mississippi Mills before a bylaw is passed, the person or public body is not entitled to appeal the decision of council to the local planning appeals tribunal and may not be added as a party to the hearing of an appeal before the tribunal unless, in the opinion of the tribunal, there are reasonable grounds to do so. Persons or public bodies are asked to pre-register with the planning department with their name and address to make comments. Oral and written submissions are accepted before and following the public meeting. Comments received prior to today's public meeting will be read out in council chambers. Further, any person wishing to be advised of council's decision with respect to tonight's applications are requested to do so directly with the planning department. In general, any applications heard at tonight's meeting will be forwarded to the next council meeting, granted that concerns or comments can be addressed in that time period. If not, an application may be forwarded to a later date. The application up for public hearing tonight is regarding zoning bylaw amendment Z-17-20, legally described as Plan 6262 MS Part Lots 7 and 8 on registered Plan 27R10569, being Part 2 in Almont Ward in the municipality of Mississippi Mills. The parcel is owned by Rachel Ort and David Ort. That is left out in the planning report. Apologies. The purpose of the zoning bylaw amendment application is to change the zoning of the subject lands from residential first density, or R1, to residential second density, subzone D, or R2D for short. The purpose is to permit and facilitate the construction of a semi-detached bungalow fronting onto Cars Street. The proposed zoning provisions are as follows. Minimum lot frontage of 7.5 meters per unit, lot area of 225 square meters per unit, maximum building height of 11 meters, minimum front yard setback of 3 meters, exterior side yard setback of 3 meters, rear yard setback of 7.5 meters, and minimum interior side yard setback of 1.2 meters. The lands right now are vacant with a total lot area of approximately 1,093 square meters or 0.27 acres. It is a corner lot on the northwest corner of Martin Street North and Carr Street at the intersection. Frontage on Carr Street is approximately 27.43 meters and frontage on Martin Street is 38.71 meters. For tonight's public meeting, we've received two public comments. The first from Ms. Judith DeFruscio. Apologies if I'm saying that incorrectly. Ms. DeFruscio had a number of questions. The first being, what are the dimensions of the property being considered for rezoning? Two, in what direction will the building be facing, Carr Street or Martin Street North? If facing Martin Street North, has permission been granted for access? Question four, what will happen to the streetlight and hydropole located on the corner of Carr Street and Martin Street North? Five, if approved, will this set a precedent for future requests for rezoning? Six, if lots approved in this area were approved for single family homes, why is rezoning even being considered? And finally, seven, traffic on Martin Street North by this property is very heavy and very few people drive the speed limit coming up the hill. And I would hope that this is addressed before any more homes are built along this stretch. Our planning consultant who has this file has responded to these questions by email, and they will also be addressed in a later report to council. The second set of comments is from Mr. Robert Brady. He writes, I strongly object to the proposal to change the form R1 to R2D. Carr Street is narrow, no sidewalk street. Parking on the street is not occurring now because R1 homes have ample laneway parking. The lot is on the corner of Cars and Martin. Martin Street is a very busy road. School buses will have a very difficult time to navigate crowded streets. The proposed change would have these semi-detached used as rentals. Absentee landlords do not make good neighbors. There are suitable housing divisions that have semi-detached and multi-unit dwellings in well-planned neighborhoods. We chose our home on Carr Street in Almont because it offered a home that was in a great location within walking distance to trails, hospital, and shopping in a unique town. We've experienced a semi-detached in Barrhaven and the forever crowded parking streets. I urge council to reject this change to preserve the small town aspects of my neighborhood. There are opportunities for entrepreneurs in large developments. If you pass this amendment, there will be no rationale to not pass more. We've also received comments from the applicants, the owners, Rachel and David Ort, and they are as follows. Hello, we are Rachel and David Ort. Dave is in the military, and Rachel is currently a stay-at-home mom to two kids. We moved to the area 6 years ago and are locals in the community. The first home we had was lost in a fire, and after going through the building process for our new home, we learned that we enjoyed the process. We needed somewhere to stay while our house was being rebuilt and identified that there was a significant lack of quality rental homes on the market. There are significant housing challenges in the Valley, Ottawa, and Ontario as a whole, which was the basis for Ontario's More Homes, More Choice document, which we are keeping in mind throughout this project. With less than 7% of all new housing in Ontario being intended for rentals, we will be addressing a significant shortfall in supply and providing something our community needs. Our goal is to purpose-build quality, safe, comfortable, affordable, and attractive rental units that can appeal to longer-term renters, including families, the elderly, and young couples alike. We appreciate and respect the town of Elmont and will be designing our project to blend in with and complement the neighboring homes. Our project is not just about the building, but also about the relationships we foster with our tenants. Our desire is to create a positive experience for the tenant and landlord alike. Approving the rezoning of our lot will enable us to make an investment into our community, which is always beneficial, but those positive impacts will be significantly higher given the current COVID-19 economic impacts. Our project will employ a local contractor, West Hill Homes, who routinely uses many contractors within Lanark County, such as Daniel Excavation, Vancey Electrical, JRB Plumbing, Elmont Home Hardware, and Carlton Place Refrigeration. We are grateful for your time and attention to this rezoning request, and we look forward to being part of the continued growth in our community. Sincerely, Rachel and David Ort. These comments were provided following the finalization of the report, so they were not included as part of the attachments.
Thanks very much, Maggie. If there is anyone who wishes to provide comment, they can do so through your office for the next week or two. Is it coming to the next meeting in November?
Yes, they believe the next report will be coming forward on November the 3rd, although we will take comments written or verbally, either by telephone or otherwise, until bylaw is passed.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for that. So if there's anyone who wishes to make comment, they can still do so. And thank you very much. So that concludes the public meeting. Which brings us to the Committee of the Whole report. So this is the Committee of the Whole report from our last meeting on October 6th. And we have six items on this report. Would anyone like to pull any of these six items for separate vote or discussion? Okay, seeing not, I'm looking for a mover and seconder then to approve the six items on the Committee of the Whole report. Deputy Mayor Minnelli and Councillor Delgany, any further discussion? Seeing not, all in favor? Thank you. And that brings us to other items for council. And the first is phase two funding. If you recall, we received phase one funding, I think it was in August or early September. The second phase of funding requires that we apply for that funding and provide information to the province. Not sure if CEO Kelly, you wanted to speak to this motion?
Thank you, Mayor Lowry. Only if there's real questions. This is a fairly straightforward report. It's basically just asking for council's approval to proceed with an application. The reason we're doing this is because the timeline is fairly short on this. It's October 30th. Your next council meeting after tonight will be November 3rd. So if we don't get the authority right now, we're gonna miss the ability to put in an application. So that's why it's on in this manner. It is a fairly straightforward process. What the treasurer is doing right now is tabulating our current expenses to determine whether we've exhausted the phase one funding, which was $361,000. If we have exhausted it, then she'll go forward and put an application forward. So at this moment in time, the work is not actually completed for this, so that's in process as well. So we're looking for your authorization in advance to proceed with this if necessary.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Yes, I talked to Rhonda about this one, and she was hoping that we were going to move it and second it, so I'll put the motion on the floor, and just on that, I hope we don't have to use it. I hope that all this goes away and we don't have to use the restart fund, so I'll move the motion.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Minnelli. Is there a seconder for the motion? Councillor Dalgety? And are there any further questions to the motion? Okay, so seeing not, all in favor? Thank you very much. And the second under other items, fairly self-explanatory. It's a proclamation for Waste Reduction Week, which began yesterday and runs to the end of the week, to the 25th. The recommendation being, whereas the Municipality of Mississippi Mills is committed to reducing waste, conserving resources, and educating the community about sustainable living, and whereas Mississippi Mills recognizes the generation of solid waste and the needless waste of resources as global environmental problems and endeavor to take the lead in our community towards environmental sustainability, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of Mississippi Mills hereby declares October 19th to 25th, 2020 as Waste Reduction Week. Is there a mover and seconder for this? Councillor Maiden? And Councillor Ferguson? Any discussion? All in favor? Thank you. And that brings us to our one bylaw. And this is the bylaw to appoint Cynthia Moyle as our acting clerk. And just as a way of some introduction, Ms. Moyle has worked here with us before, so she's familiar to us, and she's certainly familiar with our staff and the municipality. Retired 4 years ago, but has continued to work throughout the county. Ms. Moyle was the CAO clerk treasurer in Beckwith for many years. She also worked at the county, and since retiring 4 years ago, she has worked for us. She's worked for Lanark Highlands, she's worked for Montague, and we're lucky to have her back here with us and helping out while we have our clerk, Jean Harfield, off on maternity leave. So I'm looking for a mover and seconder for the bylaw that would appoint Acting Clerk Moyle. Councillor Ferguson and Councillor Dalgety, any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Thank you. And welcome officially. Thank you for joining us. So we're to announcements and invitations. Is there anything anyone would like to share with council and the public watching at home? So there's two things that I can share with council and the gallery at home. One is that given the state of affairs right now with COVID, staff and I have put together a couple contests that kids and actually kids of all ages, there's no restriction on ages, can participate in for Halloween. So the information is on the website. There's a virtual pumpkin carving contest and a costume contest, and prizes are a gift certificate to a Mississippi Mills business of your choice. The grand prize is a Mississippi Mills fun pack, so it's would give a family opportunity to use our arenas for skating, and would be also including a year-long pass for the North Lanark Museum, the Mississippi Valley Textile Museum, and the Mill of Kintail. So I share that with you. If you can share the website links, it'll be a little way we can support some fun for people who may be choosing to stay home this Halloween. And I'm just going to draw attention to something that came in to us while we've been meeting. It's a news release from our health unit, Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit, that they're identifying additional measures for COVID-19 response. And the short version of the announcement is that Dr. Stewart is putting a class order in effect as of tomorrow at 3 p.m., and it's regarding individuals who fail to self-isolate and would be fined up to $5,000 a day. The situations listed in the press release from the health unit indicating that you should be self-isolating is if you are a confirmed or probable case of COVID-19. If you have symptoms, even mild symptoms, or worsening symptoms of COVID-19 and have been tested or waiting for the results of a test, otherwise having reasonable grounds to believe that you have one or more symptoms of COVID. If you have been in close contact of a person identified in any of the former items I have mentioned, or if you are a parent or a person responsible for a person under the age of 16 who resides in this area and complies with the items I had just listed. So that will be shared with all of council. We'll have it on our website as well. But do take note that that takes effect as of tomorrow at 3 o'clock. That just came out this evening. Was there anything else anyone would like to add to the invitations and announcements? Okay, seeing not, I'm looking for a mover and seconder for the confirmatory bylaw, which confirms proceedings of this evening. Councillor Dalgety and Councillor Holmes, all in favor? Thank you. And adjournment, mover and seconder for adjournment. Councillor Ferguson, Councillor Maiden, all in favor? Thank you, we're adjourned.
We'll take five before we start the next meeting.